these tidings to great Lucifer. Say Faustus doth surrender up his soul, so he will spare him 24 years to give me whatsoever I shall ask, to tell me whatsoever I demand, to slay mine enemies and aid my friends, and always be obedient to my will.
Okay, we're back with the Dystopian Halloween Party podcast, our second ever. And first time around, well, hold on. I never introduce ourselves. I'm Zach, and this is Callie, in case anybody was wondering. And our first time with, was actually our first ever podcast, was the Halloween Party podcast. And we talked about the classic 1987 heavy metal horror film Rock and Roll Nightmare. And this year we are kind of wanted to carry on in that tradition and do another music based horror movie. And it, you know, it wasn't, I guess, necessary that it was from the 80s, but for whatever reason the 80s really seemed to lend themselves to music based horror. I guess it's a combination of, you know, home video just kind of taking off. And so there were a lot of like, there was kind of like a resurgence in low budget horror films. And also, of course, heavy metal, you know, lends itself more than most genres to horror themes. So there's actually a surprising amount of movies to choose from. And this year, we're talking about a film from 1986 called Trick or Treat. I have to say, like, Trick or Treat is a better film than Rock and Roll Nightmare by pretty much any metric imaginable.
But also, you know, pretty much any film by default is better than Rock and Roll Nightmare. I mean, not to discredit Trick or Treat, but I'm just saying that probably the only movie I've seen that's worse than Rock and Roll Nightmare is Rock and Roll Nightmare 2.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the bar is pretty low. It's a better film. It's a much more like legitimately, not only just like legitimately better made, but I feel like thematically it has some interesting things to say, and I'll get into that a little bit. You know, I'm not really gonna like dissect the movie, but I will get into the things about it that I think are interesting. At the same time, it's not as fun as Rock and Roll Nightmare, and we were kind of talking about that before we started recording. Rock and Roll Nightmare was a really strong way to start, and nothing else was just quite as appealing. There's no other movie like that. Even other horror movies about heavy metal, they don't have a fight with a giant rubber Satan at the end. you know, and so like, if that's what you're expecting this time, you'll probably come away disappointed, but
and that's honestly my that was my relationship with Trick or Treat, honestly, was that like I found out about it because I like the group Fastway and they did the soundtrack, and so everything I was reading about it, it's like I like Fastway. I at the time, I mean, I still like heavy metal, but at the time I was like a legitimate metalhead in like ninth grade. I was obsessed with heavy metal. I used to tie scarves to my legs and wear those to school. But I had watched Rock and Roll Nightmare, so when I wanted to watch Trick or Treat, I was expecting it to be as campy as Rock and Roll Nightmare. And so right. when I watched it, you know, it's a legitimate movie, but I like horrible movies. Like, those are entertaining to me. So I was just kind of disappointed by it. Watching it again, I appreciated it more because I'm older and, like, I guess I was just more in the mood for it. But the first time, I was just like, well, that was dumb.
So, speaking of disappointing things about Trick or Treat, I think, I guess we might as well address the elephant in the room right up front. If you buy the DVD version of this movie, you will have a very different idea about what the film actually consists of.
I already know what you're going to say. Because that was another reason I was disappointed in it. Because I saw the cover artwork first.
Right.
So this is what I thought before I saw the movie. I had watched Rock and Roll Nightmare, I was expecting something as ridiculous as that.
Right.
Fastway did the soundtrack, so I'm excited about that because I love Fastway. The cover prominently features Gene Simmons and Ozzy Osbourne. But then I watched the movie, and they are probably, like, on screen for about... Gene Simmons probably, like, 5 minutes.
Right.
Ozzy, like, 2 minutes.
Yeah.
But they're the biggest goddamn thing on the cover art for the movie.
Yeah, it's actually, like, you can't tell what the movie is actually about because their heads are taking up the vast majority of the, like, retail space. I'm
looking at the cover work again, and I just realized, like, how bad it is. The one I'm looking at, they're both, like, older than they are actually in the movie, too.
Yeah, they're not even stills from the film. It's just, like, two random, like, publicity photos of Ozzy and Gene Simmons, not in character.
Yeah, and they're just, like, pasted on the front. It looks like they're, like, on vacation together, and they took a picture in front of, like, they got someone to take their picture in front of a burning building with a skull coming out of it.
And they're not having very much fun on vacation either. Like,
they both look, like, morose.
So, yeah, that's like a classic, you know, low budget DVD release trick. I remember when I was a kid renting the original version of Little Shop of Horrors and thinking that it was a Jack Nicholson movie. Jack Nicholson is in it for literally like 5 minutes. He's the Gene Simmons of Little Shop of Horrors. But the VHS tape I rented absolutely did have a big picture of Jack Nicholson on the cover. Like, it's pretty shameless. So yeah, you're kind of, you know, it sets you up for disappointment because Gene Simmons has a cameo as a, or I guess not really a cameo, it's a minor role as a radio DJ, and he's in, I think, like two scenes basically. And Ozzy's is more of an authentic cameo, and it's actually really clever. They have him playing a televangelist who's like talking about the dangers of heavy metal music.
And we're back with evangelist and moral crusader, the Reverend Aaron Gilstrom, who's dropped by with some visual aids. We're talking today about rock pornography, and I'll have to agree with you, we have some pretty ribald stuff here. Those rockers really have a strange sense of humor, don't they?
I don't even think it's a sense of humor. I think they're just out and out sick people. I mean, and they're trying to make everyone else around them who listened to their music as sick as they are.
It doesn't make any goddamn sense for a televangelist to have Ozzy Osbourne's like drug-addled English accent, but It's at least like some clever like stunt casting, and you know his hair is,
and the hair too. It looks. Is it short or is it just a ponytail?
I honestly was wondering that when I watched the movie. It's hard to tell. They definitely try to make it look like he has short, clean cut hair, but
he refused to cut his hair for this role, which I don't blame him, but I just think it's hilarious.
Right. So, you know, those are the downsides. What Trick or Treat is actually about, and let me just say one more thing. The title Trick or Treat does this movie no fucking favors. Like, yes, it happens to take place on Halloween night, like many other horror films. Like, that doesn't set it apart. The Halloween part is pretty much incidental to the rest of the movie. Honestly, Rock and Roll Nightmare would have been a better title for this movie than arguably it was for, like, they should have called Rock and Roll Nightmare Edge of Hell and called this movie Rock and Roll Nightmare. But yeah, Trick or Treat is just like the most generic title.
No, I agree. It's like Trick or Treat to me is the most benign part of Halloween, and this film ends up with like a bunch of people dying, and it's actually pretty morbid towards the end. So it's like,
yeah,
okay, and like, what's the treat? and the trick, I get, like, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it seems like one of those movies where like the distributor gave it a title, or they just kind of like came up with a title that they thought would look good on a poster or whatever. But let's talk about some actual good things about the film, or at least neutral things. We'll start with neutral things. So the movie was directed by and he's actually mostly known as an actor. His name's Charles Martin Smith, and he was in films like American Graffiti and The Untouchables, and one thing I thought was interesting doing research about this movie is if you look at the other films he's directed, it's pretty hilarious because basically everything is like a children's movie from the 2000s. Like, he wrote and directed Dolphin Tale with Harry Connick Jr. and also Dolphin Tale 2. You know, this movie is a weird way for the guy who directed Dolphin Tale to start his career. He directed Air Bud. That was, I just think it's crazy that, you know, he goes from like a heavy metal horror movie to a talking dog playing basketball. Like, that is range. But who's to blame for it all? All of the questions unsolved capsize your voyage of dreams. Pretty much, other than Ozzy and Gene Simmons, those are pretty much the only recognizable actors. I'm not even really going to go down the list.
Not exactly actors either.
Yeah, right.
Although Gene Simmons would like you to think he is.
Yeah. According to Wikipedia, the role of Sammy Kerr, the resurrected rock star who's the villain of the film, was originally intended to be Blackie Lawless from Wasp, which makes sense because Sammy Kerr literally is Blackie Lawless from Wasp. But I don't know if
it's true. That would have been amazing too.
It would have been, because it's not a very demanding role. I mean, the guy who plays him, his name's Tony Fields, and he's better known as like he was like a dancer for Michael Jackson, in like, you know, some of his music videos. So it's not like he has acting chops. I mean, he doesn't have many lines. So it would have been perfect for Blackie Lawless to play. I don't know if this is true, though. I mean, Wikipedia does say citation needed right next to that. But again, the character is Blackie Lawless, so...
Well, I don't know why you would lie about that either. Like, why would someone edit the page on Trick or Treat just to come up with that completely inconsequential lie? Like, just so we give out false information on this podcast. They're just fucking with us in particular. Well, Blackie Lawless and the rest of Wasp, I think, or else just Blackie Lawless, but I'm pretty sure it was the entire group. Made a cameo in the Village People movie, Can't Stop the Music. So, I mean, he wasn't really acting. He was literally just doing his, like, a very small portion of what he does on stage.
Right.
But
Wikipedia also claims Gene Simmons was originally offered the role of Sammy Kerr, but he did not think much of the script and ultimately agreed to do only a cameo as radio DJ Nuke. Again, citation needed. So I think it's safe to say that Gene Simmons was the one who added that to the Wikipedia page.
You know what, though? I believe it. Yeah. He's definitely petty enough to do something like that.
Yeah. He definitely is the guy who would look at the script for this fucking movie and be like, no, this isn't challenging enough for me as an actor.
No, I was saying that he'd be the one to do that with the Wikipedia page.
Oh.
He probably wanted the role of Sammy Kerr, and they wouldn't give it to him, and they said, well, we'll give you this cameo part, and he waited until Wikipedia came along. You don't think that he's not petty enough to do something like that?
No, I think you're actually right. I'm on board with this theory. The only thing I'm surprised about is that he didn't write about it in his autobiography.
Right.
Wake up, sleepyheads. It's party time! Yeah, this is the old Noosa coming at you right here on this fine, fine Rocktober morning. It's the sweeping sensation that's sweeping the nation, and I'm going to do it to you right here, right now. Wow!
But yeah, so, you know, you mentioned the soundtrack by Fastway, who were, of course, the side project. Was it side project or former? Was Fast City Clark still in Motorhead when he started Fastway?
No, I want to say no. I think it was the group he was in afterward.
Yeah. Okay. So it's Fast Eddie Clark from Motorhead started a band, and, the soundtrack is good. You know, I think as a heavy metal fan, I felt it would have like, I just don't think Fastway are like satanic enough for this movie. Like I think Wasp would have been a better choice if they could have gotten Wasp or maybe not like Venom, but you know, like Fastway just seem a little too like benign to me for this kind of music, but they do a good job, and I enjoyed the soundtrack.
I didn't.
Yeah. Oh, really?
No, because my like Fastway's first album is really good. And yeah, this is just kind of disappointing to me. It just seems like Fastway's first album sounded different. It was still heavy metal, but it had like a different kind of sound to it. And this one just seemed like they were just doing hair metal now, and I was just...
Yeah, I mean, it's not... it's generic heavy metal. Like, if you didn't know it was by Fastway, you wouldn't necessarily no. You know, you just think, oh, they commissioned this music for the movie.
Right. And if I'm going to hear generic heavy metal, I'd rather hear it from Wasp, like you said.
Right. So in conclusion, this movie would have been better if Wasp was involved in some capacity.
You know what? It really would have, though. I didn't even think about that until you mentioned it. But now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, this movie would be so much better with Wasp.
Kind of segues to what I like specifically, you know, other than it just being like an entertaining, you know, kind of campy horror movie, but still, you know, sort of takes itself a little bit seriously. You know, it's an entertaining movie to watch for 98 minutes. The other thing I like about it is it, whether intentionally or not, and I do think it was intentional. It really comments in interesting ways on the sort of culture around heavy metal and the moral panic around pop music in the mid 80s. You know, obviously this was a time when stuff like the Parents Music Resource Center, those court battles were happening. There was a big like mainstream move. You know, these were not fringe politicians. It was like Al Gore's wife and a bunch of congressmen's wives really making an effort to clean up the, you know, moral content of pop music, which at the time, probably the biggest or most popular genre among teenagers was, you know, some form of heavy metal. Which is really surreal to think about in retrospect. Like, there's something quaint about this movie because it's like the like scary music that was going to corrupt children was still by white people back then. Like it wasn't rap music. So it's there's something almost like nostalgic about like, oh yeah, remember when like the Moral Crusaders were just religious and not low-key racist. And so there's, you know, it's really kind of commenting on that whole period. You know, the PMRC, there was the trial of the kid who committed suicide and they blamed it on Ozzy Osbourne. And of course there is the controversy, and this was more of a fringe issue, but it got weirdly mainstream. There was a controversy over backmasked messages in rock music. This idea that rock bands are hiding subliminal satanic messages by recording their voices backwards and putting them on the record. And it's just such a great idea to make a horror movie out of that because it's, I remember when I was a kid, when I first learned about backmasking, like the idea of it freaked me out. And I was an impressionable kid, and when I listen to some, you know, supposed examples of backmasking, it is creepy. Like hearing a like a voice that's turned backwards and then forwards is unnerving. So you know, they did a good job of I think that was a good call to say, okay, this is ripe material for a horror movie, which is not to say that Trick or Treat is scary, because it isn't, but you know, I like the ideas that they were working with.
It's also interesting because it's like, I feel like it's supposed to be pro-metal, and yet the things that they're talking about that parents and like the PMRC and everything were concerned about in this movie they become true, so it's weirdly like anti-metal too, because it's right. Like if you listen to an album backwards, your heavy metal hero will come alive and like kill you and everyone you love. that's basically the moral.
Right. So spoiler don't listen alert. To your Wasp records backwards, or Blackie Lawless will kill all of your friends. I guess kind of talk about, again, it's Rock and Roll Nightmare was a movie that needed to be just to exercise it from my mind. I needed to unpack it and just be like, what was going on here? What did I watch? I needed to go through just to like confirm that I wasn't going crazy. Trick or Treat is it's honestly a pretty formulaic movie. You can definitely, if you've ever watched a teen movie, you know what to expect from the characters, especially like an 80s teen movie. If you've ever watched a horror movie, like a slasher film especially, you know how the plot is basically going to proceed. So I don't think we need to go through scene by scene necessarily the way we did with Rock and Roll Nightmare, because that movie had no fucking structure. So it's like you basically, there's no way to neatly summarize it. You have to say literally everything that happened in the movie.
And every scene is worth talking about, because every scene is fucking ridiculous and unbelievable.
Right. So, you know, we won't really give it a play-by-play, but just so the general premise is... it's about this kid named Eddie Weinbauer, who for some reason goes by the name Ragman.
Yeah, I don't know why. That's the first thing you hear. Like, at the beginning, he's writing a letter to who you later find out is Sammy Kerr, and he's like, this is Ragman. I was like, who the fuck is Ragman? And why Ragman?
Yeah, I never really did find out. One thing we talked about that we both heard, so his last name is Weinbauer. And, you know, obviously he's bullied because he's the protagonist of a teen movie from the 80s. And the, like, jocks who are bullying him always call him by his last name because they're you know, antagonists from a teen movie from the 80s. And when they say Weinbauer, I swear to God, for, like, the first half of the movie, I thought they were saying White Power. And I'm like, why are they calling this kid White Power? Are they, like, are they mocking him?
Right. I was, like, talking myself through it, like, while I'm watching. I'm just like, if they're mocking him for being a white supremacist, which is in no other place mentioned in this movie that he's a white supremacist, like, right. That's weirdly progressive for teenagers in an all-white high school or middle school, wherever it is, to be... Yeah. White Power, like him mocking him because of that. I don't think anyone gets mocked for being a white supremacist.
I know. Yeah, I was like, is this a comment on, like, are they saying that metalheads are racist because there is, like, you know, punk and metal, there definitely are, like, sub communities that are, you know, white supremacists, but no, it turns out his name just sort of sounds like White Power, and I'm deaf, so that solved that mystery. you know, he's an outcast in high school. He listens to heavy metal music. He gets bullied for listening to metal, which I can't really speak with authority on this. I guess kids will make fun of you if you don't listen to the right kind of music.
Well, and, like, the whole thing about heavy metal is that people, like, it that's another thing I thought was funny about this movie, too, is that the entire premise is a guy who was angry because of how he got treated in high school. Like, that's the entire character of Sammy Kerr. That's why he's mad, right. Because they wouldn't let him play at his old high school.
Right.
And, yeah, like, that's kind of like the myth of heavy metal, is that you're an outcast and you listen to heavy metal and that's what unites you with everyone. is your love of metal and like all these
yeah
all these weird little white kids basically.
Yeah, exactly. And I that was another thing that that was I thought the movie did that was kind of cool was sort of portraying and dramatizing that kind of teen angst and the sense of the intensity of connection with music that really only happens when you're a teenager. You know, like, obviously I love music. I spend way too much time and money writing for a website that does not pay me anything, writing for two websites that do not pay me anything, you know, just because I'm passionate about music and also because I'm a narcissist. But, you know, you don't care about bands or albums or any, like, you just don't care about shit ever as much as you did when you were a teenager. And I thought, you know, obviously it's a little cartoonish the way he's like really idolizing Sammy Kerr, and like you said, he's writing in his diary at the beginning, but it's like a letter to Sammy Kerr. And no homo. You know, he's yeah and he's always saying you know, like, nobody understands him like I do and stuff like that. And so, you know, that's a little like that's a little over the top, but I think that it's kind of touching on something interesting, which is that, like, the intensity of teenagers' connections with music and with, like, rock stars is something that you know, it's a real thing, and I thought it was cool that this movie explored that a little bit.
It's me again, Ragman. Well, the song remains the same. Total conflict. Them against us. I can't believe they canceled your Halloween concert. It's like you say, rock's chosen warriors will rule the apocalypse. Airheads and brain deads are everywhere. Who needs them? What do they got that I need?
You know, he's bullied. He's an outcast. He listens to metal. That makes him, like, part of something bigger. But he also resents, you know, the mainstream people around him who, God, I'm trying to remember what song were they listening to when the girl he likes invites him to the pool party. I feel like it was a recognizable song, and it was funny that was like what the cool people were listening to.
Right, I remember what it sounds like. It was just kind of like new romantic kind of music, like that synth pop, basically 80s synth pop.
Right. Yeah, so I don't know. It's just funny. I know that it's like
there was the Houdini song when they was at the dance at the end before they put on Sammy Kerr's album. They were listening to Houdini, which I thought was hilarious.
That was hilarious. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's like, you know, why are you listening to that metal stuff? Why can't you listen to, you know, Duran Duran like all the cool kids?
But you know what else I thought was weird about that is that before Sammy Kerr died, or like at the beginning when they had the news story that you later find out that he died, like, at the end of, it was saying how he was trying to play at his old high school, which is the one that, Eddie Weinbauer went to.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ragman. And, he was saying that he wanted to play at that high school, but, the news anchor was saying that, like, the students were all excited that he was gonna play. But apparently, Eddie Weinbauer is the only one that listens to his music. So, like, what
right,
the fuck are they excited,
like,
about then?
Yeah, he's, like, ridiculed and ostracized for it.
Right.
We sent out invitations for weeks and weeks. We invited in all kinds of creeps, like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, the Addams Family and the Monster Five, the Invisible Man. Could he be? We know he got inside the party free. One of these days they're gonna catch him red-handed, not for sneaking in free, for being a booty bandit. The bartender was cute, but kinda hairy, and Dracula was killing those Bloody Marys. He got drunk as a skunk, started trouble all night, but everybody knew his bark was bigger than his bite. It was the only place for you to be. The first 200 wishes in the party were free, and all was well until the clock struck 12. Everybody jumped up and started raising hell.
Another thing about Eddie is he has a kind of weird, inappropriate relationship with the local radio DJ. Like, does he intern there? Like, what was the relationship there? He just like
I have no. It seemed like he had a job there. Hang out. Yeah. Right. Well, I thought he had a job there, but I don't know.
But he was never at work.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, maybe I figured they just didn't show him at work, but yeah, I don't know. He's just friends with Gene Simmons. Makes sense.
Yeah. You know, it's just totally normal for a 40-year-old man to be friends with a teenage boy. So, you know, basically what happens is this: he loves this rock star, Sammy Kerr, and he finds out, like you said, that Sammy Kerr died in a hotel fire, which it's heavily suggested in a like flashback dream sequence was started by Sammy performing some kind of magic ritual with candles. He was not careful enough with the candles and burned down the hotel.
Well, Jimmy Page did basically the same thing. So.
Right. Maybe that's where they got it. Maybe that was a reference.
It might have been, but it's also kind of low-hanging fruit that he would be, right, you know, surrounded by candles. Like.
Right.
Because when they say it on the news story, it just sounds like he was the victim of a hotel fire, and that could be from anything in a hotel.
Right.
But to right, find but out that he was doing some like voodoo shit and for the hotel door, I'm like, I felt a little less sorry for him. Like, well.
And he turns out to be a dick in a lot of ways. Like he left behind this acetate called "Songs in the Key of Death," which I thought that was pretty clever. That somehow Gene Simmons' character gets his hands on. I don't know
right,
why.
I was like, are they friends? And then, yeah. Like, did he listen to this before he gave it to a child? Like, what the fuck? It's not even good music. It's literally just, like, guitars screaming and
right,
a guy talking backwards.
So, what do you think?
Well, it's loud, fast, and thrashing. A little bit short on the melody, but...
Great gift. Thanks, Gene.
Yeah.
I don't know why I keep calling him by Gene when he has... I don't remember any of the characters' names.
Well, because his real name is Nuke, which is stupid. He should have just been called Gene. So, obviously Eddie is pretty torn up about his rock star hero dying. And then on top of that, you know, we kind of mentioned this scene briefly. He has a crush on a normal popular girl because, again, it's a movie from the 80s. And she invites him, seemingly, you know, with her heart in the right place, she invites him to a pool party. He, of course, gets ridiculed and thrown out, thrown into the pool and then kicked out of the party.
And well, he vows revenge. He gets a weight put in his backpack and then they throw him into the pool. So they're trying to kill him. Like,
yeah,
going to save. That's where it gets really, I guess bullying does get to that point in some schools.
Right.
But they were going to kill him. Like, I just wonder what was their plan after that. Because nobody was going down there to save him. The girl has to save him.
Right.
So it's like, what was their plan? Clearly someone's going to know that y'all killed him. You were the only, ones in the pool. there's a kid's dead body at the bottom of the school pool. Like,
we didn't like him, so we murdered him.
He listened to metal. Fuck that guy.
So, I mean, the bullies are definitely, they're horrible people. And he, you know, vows to get revenge.
I'm going to nail every one of those bastards. I don't know how, I don't know when, but I'm going to nail them.
And the way that he ends up being able to get revenge is from this acetate that the Gene Simmons character gives him, which, like you said, it has Sammy's voice recorded backwards. So if he plays it backwards, if he plays the black the backmasked messages, he finds that Sammy is speaking specifically to him.
He'll like ask it questions, and then while he's asking it, he reverses the record, and then it plays and answers his questions like a magic eight ball.
Maybe I am nuts.
You. And I'm Gary. Ragnar.
Fucking real.
You know, a darker version of this movie would have been if Sammy was all in this kid's head and he was killing people, but they didn't really go there. It is real. Sammy has the ability to, I mean, he basically travels through anything electric, right? That's like the rule that they established.
Because he comes out of your radio.
Go into the speakers. Yeah.
Like it. I don't think he comes out of any other appliances. It has to be like an amp or a stereo or like a car stereo or something.
Right.
So I don't. It's like sound, but also electricity. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. It is really supernatural. But you know, he's impressionable and angry, and that's what kind of opens him up. It really is like a dramatization of like the fears of heavy metal music. You know, turning otherwise normal but alienated teenagers into like violent you know, devil worshippers, basically. Like that's literally what this movie is about. But I think you're right in that it's not really it's not necessarily on the side of the people who are crusading against heavy metal. It's maybe sort of poking fun at that idea, but also weirdly validating it at the same time.
Right, I thought that was strange, because it's clearly made by and for people who like heavy metal. No one else would enjoy this movie. And yet, yeah, it's validating the fears of, like, the PMRC and all these people.
Demonic beast. What happened to the good old simple love song? I love you. That's a good word to use. Nowadays, they have to write some sickness. It's just absolutely sick and bizarre, and I'm going to do my utmost best to try and stop it now.
Anything you'd like to say in conclusion?
These evil people have just got to be stopped.
So basically we get the situation where, you know, Eddie wants revenge, and now he has this power through Sammy. At first it's very empowering. It's kind of funny because, like, the first time that Sammy talks to him, he tells him, you know, to make himself bait. It's like, so he says in a very like cryptic way, basically, to, you know, make yourself the bait. And he interprets that as meaning set up like a bunch of booby traps and then piss off the bullies and make them chase him through the school so that they activate the booby traps, which is like, I was just thinking when I was watching this movie, like, this is so quaintly pre-Columbine, because, you know, I mean, these kind of, like, I feel like now when we think of like a disaffected teenager who wants revenge against his bullies, he's probably just going to kill them. But in this movie, it's like,
right,
you know,
that's
silly,
that's
hijinks.
What I thought, because I always like, I provide my own commentary track even when I'm watching a movie alone. So when he was, after the bullies dropped him in the pool, and he was outside talking to the girl, I think her name's Leslie or whatever, and I might have that name correct. And he was like, he was like saying how he's gonna get revenge. I was just like, well, you know, get an AK. that was what I said out loud, and then I'm like, that's such a weird thought to have, that was my first thought, and I see like a disaffected white teenager, and I'm like, I mean, you could just get a gun.
Right, but nowadays it is the first thought, because that just, like, it happens so much. So it's kind of interesting. It's almost like, I wonder, like, would this movie be too dark to make now, because Or would it be like, you know, maybe they could make it, but it would be inherently more serious because now we've seen what happens when like alienated, you know, teens get revenge against their classmates, and it's not like running them on wild goose chases into like you know, chairs and stuff in there.
I mean, some of the stuff that happens later is a lot more violent.
That is true. But that's kind of when that's when Sammy is sort of taking control, and Eddie kind of gets cold feet very quickly.
Yeah.
You know, understandably, because he didn't actually want to kill anyone.
I'm really starting to get worried. Now tell me, what did we do to her? What did we do to her?
Nail them all.
Come on, man. Now she wound up in the hospital. Now this is very serious. We can't just go and...
Nail them all.
Nail them all.
Fuck them.
I think we should end it. I don't want to do anymore.
No wimps. No false metal.
I think my favorite revenge tactic is, and my favorite scene, period, is when, he like, gives the tape to one of the bullies, and then, he's making out with his girlfriend in the car, and his girlfriend, for some reason, just, like, decides to put headphones on and listen to music, and then Satan comes out the headphones and, like, undresses her. And eats her pussy, and then that puts her in the hospital somehow. That's like the best way.
Yeah, it's like
that's what you
the
need to
headphones
do.
Like melt in her ears.
Yeah, like that's what you need to do. Don't buy a gun. Get Satan to eat the pussy of your bully's girlfriend.
That is like, yeah, that's pretty savage. that scene definitely is like, that's like the big horror showpiece. You know, that's like the moment, like I don't know, like the shower in Psycho or whatever. That's the moment that's what they were going for, is for that to be like the big iconic moment. There's also a part where, Sammy basically control a circular saw in the shop class and almost kill one of the bullies?
I think that it, like, somehow the saw got turned on. It wasn't necessarily Eddie's fault, and he ended up turning it off. But, like, the bully got stuck in it. But, you know, at the same time, the bully was throwing these, like, huge-ass monkey wrenches at him, so...
Yeah, I have to admit, if I was in that situation, I would probably make him wait a couple seconds before I turned the circular saw off, too, you know? So, yeah, he's you know, he starts getting revenge, and it's really... It's the headphones scene where the tables kind of turn and he realizes, wait, this is fucked up. Like, this is for real. But Sammy is not having it. And he's like, no, we're going to kill them. And now the goal changes to Eddie has to stop Sammy, who also at this point he's able to, like, manifest himself physically. They never really explain, like, why suddenly he can do that, where he starts out just being able to talk through the record, and then you know, Eddie makes the tape for him. I don't know if it's like the more the the more the album is played, the more powerful he becomes. Or if I'm just overthinking this and there is no justification.
That's what I was thinking. It was either like the more it gets reproduced, the more the more power he has. Or right. The more people he kills or like messes with. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. So the final, you know, the like, because again, this is a formulaic movie. So like the big third act, like, you know, clock is ticking. We gotta stop the bad thing from happening. Is Gene Simmons had planned to play Songs in the Key of Death on the radio at midnight on Halloween, which, as we know, when that album gets played, bad shit happens. So Eddie has to stop him before, I guess, you know, the whole town goes crazy or something. So, you know, the rest of the movie is kind of like a race against the clock. And I don't have that much to say about it, really. This is kind of where the movie's weaknesses come out a little bit. Because you get a lot more of Sammy's, the actor who plays Sammy, a lot more of him on camera. And like we said, he's not really an actor. So it kind of like, he works best as an invisible presence, or like someone who's only glimpsed and you only hear his voice. And he's just sort of like a specter in the movie. He's not especially threatening as a physical being, even though he can, like, you know, shoot lightning bolts out of his guitar and shit. And that is one of the coolest parts of the movie, is where he shows up at the Halloween dance and everybody just assumes he's an impersonator, and then he just starts shooting lightning out of his guitar and killing kids. That part was pretty awesome.
This is another thing I think I mentioned this before, like, Sammy, his whole thing, his whole story, whatever, parallels Eddie's in that, like, he's, to me, it just seemed like he was still mad about his high school years, even though he's, like, what, like, 30 or something, and, like, right. He got successful, but, like, he wanted to play his high school again, and they wouldn't let him, and then he dies, and when he's resurrected, the first thing he does is go back to his old high school and start killing kids. Yeah. That didn't even have anything to do with him. Like, it's just kind of that, I don't know, I think it's just, you don't see that too often, where it's like, even a grown-ass man is still upset about how he was treated in high school.
Right. And that is kind of like, you know, not to throw like an entire, because I like heavy metal, and one of the things I like about it is that it's sort of unashamedly low culture and juvenile, but it is juvenile, you know? And so, like, for you have to kind of question, for someone who in their 30s or, you know, however old Sammy Kerr is supposed to be, for that to be, like, their whole ideology is, like, still processing the, like, feelings that you had when you were a teenager, and for that to be, like, the whole philosophy you live your life by, it is kind of like it's just sort of like emotionally stunted, you know? And so, yeah, I think that's it is kind of, again, I this part, I don't know if it's intentional, but it can be read as sort of a commentary on people who just sort of can't get over their adolescence. You know, nowadays a lot of them end up being like men's rights activists, but some of them end up being metalheads. So yeah, in the end, Eddie manages to, it was kind of clever what he did. So he was driving in a stolen police car, which is a really metal thing to do. And his like plan is, because the police car has at this point, Sammy is just like appearing out of everywhere, you know, to get him. Like there's no way to run from him. So the plan was to have him appear in the back seat, and because police cars always have that divider, you know, he'd be trapped back there, and he would be able to kill him. It works.
What was the thing
and,
with the toilet?
And yeah, that's pretty much it. What was the thing with the toilet?
It was this one part where, like, before the police car. He has, like, Sammy has his arm in the toilet, and he keeps getting electrocuted. At this point, I'm not even going to lie, I stopped paying, like, I stopped giving my full undivided attention to the movie. I was, like, half on my phone, half watching it, so I'd look up and be like, why is there a toilet? And then I'd just be on Snapchat. So, probably my confusion stems from the fact that I was not paying attention to the movie, but I just wondered, since you seem to remember the ending more.
Well, I know that they were, you know, they went to the radio station to, like, to stop the broadcast from happening, and they had to destroy the reel-to-reel that was going to play. And so, but in order to do that, they had to, like, lure Sammy away, because otherwise he would stop them. He, like, Sammy shows up while he's in the bathroom looking for the car keys, and Sammy like trips and his hand goes in the toilet, and so Eddie is like flushing the toilet and making, and it's like it's electrocuting him because he's basically like made out of electricity.
Okay.
So he's flushing the toilet. Yeah. So that's,
yeah, I knew that was what was going on. I just couldn't like, why did he put his hand in the toilet?
Yeah, I think he like tripped basically.
Okay. Well, that explains that.
Right.
So there's a swirly scene, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's from the 80s.
Right.
That's the movie. Like I don't know if I have anything else to talk about. Do you?
Not really. I think we pretty much covered everything. I mean, there's not that much to say. Except his friend was a fucking idiot. Like, why would all this weird shit be happening? And your friend gives you explicit directions to destroy this tape, and you're like, oh, I think I'll play this at the school dance instead. fucking
yeah,
idiot.
Yeah, yeah. I'm glad you brought that up because I needed to get that off my chest. Like,
he was so goddamn smug too. That's what pissed me off the most. That he's so fucking smug.
Yeah.
He looks like he's like 30 years old and he's still in high school.
Right. Yeah, they didn't even make it like they didn't even make it seem like maybe Sammy was like, you know, possessing him or something. Like he was infiltrating his mind, you know, like The Shining or something. And
it was like just
making him.
That,
yeah, he's just a dickhead.
That was the noise infiltrating his mind.
Yeah, he's like, oh yeah, sure, I destroyed it. You know, it's like, no, you fucking didn't. And then you had the indignity to put it on at the dance. Like, yeah, he's an asshole.
Yeah, and why? He's like
the real villain of this movie, I think.
Yeah, him and Gene Simmons. Because Eddie was just, you know, like, he's a huge fan. He doesn't know that he's an evil demon, basically. Right. And then it was fucking Gene Simmons and this kid. And what the hell happened to Nuke? Where was Nuke during all this? Was he even in? Because I know he was in the studio when he was playing the tape. But what happened to him after that?
Well, he just fucked off he actually had the tape set to play automatically.
Yeah, so he's not even doing his goddamn job. He's just like,
exactly. He probably knew what was going to happen and, like, took off for a different, you know, country.
Yeah, with what's his name? The friend. I don't even know his name.
He's not important.
Fuck that guy.
I mean, I think really the moral of the story is, like, if you have a friend like that kid, then you're probably going to end up like summoning a rock star or demon and you know, killing your classmates, because like, what good is he? Like, he's not, that's not what friends are supposed to stop you from doing shit like that.
All right, so like, this kid, he has very few friends. His only two friends seem to be Nuke and this asshole, whatever the hell his name is.
Yeah, a middle-aged man and a teenager who looks like a middle-aged man.
Yeah, neither of them are trustworthy. So what, that says what? That says you don't need anybody. You can do everything by yourself.
Exactly.
Fuck a friend.
So, yeah, that's the movie. It's entertaining. It's no Rock and Roll Nightmare, and that's both a good and a bad thing. And
probably good,
you know,
for everyone.
Yeah,
else.
Probably good overall. If you're someone with a soft spot for metal from the '80s, or you know, just like classic heavy metal in general, you know, you especially if you remember or are aware of that period of time, the moral panic around heavy metal, it's a fun like exploration of that. There, you could do a lot worse for Halloween viewing. That wraps up our dystopian Halloween party for this year. I hope you enjoyed it. If you're just stumbling upon this podcast, there is a lot of stuff on our website, dystopiandanceparty.com. We have a video about the fashion history of Dracula, which I am very proud of. We've got a guide to the music of Black Sabbath. If you're a fan of Trick or Treat, you should definitely check that out, because Black Sabbath are better than the music from Trick or Treat. By this time we will have had our playlist about witchcraft, and also a video of me dying very frequently in Castlevania Rondo of Blood. So that's a pretty good, you know, 2 weeks worth of content for us, I have to say. You know, I'm pretty happy with what we managed to pull off in a relatively short amount of time. So next month we will be going back to the Kiss autobiography grind with a talk about Ace Frehley's No Regrets. That will be, I'm sure, a scintillating conversation. And yeah, we'll just leave it at that. Thanks for listening, and happy Halloween.
Wake up, sleepyheads. It's party time.